Content. Bonjour, mon nom est Gaël Benoît, je suis le gestionnaire du groupe des technologies d'apprentissage à l'Université de Moncton. For this next presentation, I've been asked to introduce Stephen Down, who's going to give us an address on the topic of social and collaborative technologies. Stephen is a senior researcher at the Institute of Information Technology of e-learning group of Canada's National Research Council, that's all. He's renowned for his expertise on learning objects, metadata, weblog, education, content syndication. His work also includes the development of educational content syndication systems such as SURSS and the design of a digital waste management system for learning. Stephen is frequently asked to teach seminars and give lectures on online learning all over the world. Stephen is perhaps best known for his online learning, his online daily, which is short for Online Learning Daily, which reaches thousands of readers around the world. Stephen's formal education is in philosophy. He's received a Bachelor of Arts and a Master of Arts from the University of Calgary and continued his education at the University of Alberta. Lately, Stephen, I'm glad to say that, Stephen has been collaborating with us in Desire to Learn, a Canadian company, which some of you know, and my institution at the University of Moncton on a major e-learning R&D initiative funded by the Atlantic Canada's Opportunity Agency. So I'm proud to introduce my colleague, Stephen. So please help me in welcoming Stephen.
This is my first talk in a hockey arena. I'll talk about culturalization. I know that I'm somewhere in the deep slot. Pretty good shot on net. But if I can, I want to take a couple steps ahead, maybe. Maybe look for a screen. I want to talk about creation of learning communities, formation of learning communities. David Gibson's talked a lot about the nature of the learner and the nature of the learning. I want to pick up on that and talk about the nature of the community, the structure of the community. And I'm talking not just about the nature of learning communities, but the nature of learning community here in New Brunswick, how we as learners and learning professionals can help each other learn. So I want to begin by talking about why I came to New Brunswick, because I've lived all over Canada, and I came to New Brunswick in 2001 to join the National Research Council, and so the first thing that brought me here to New Brunswick was the job. That's the office building where I work. I have to say it was the job because I have a group leader, a director, and a director general sitting in the audience. If I don't say it's the job, I might be out of one when I leave. Another reason why I came is I used to come to New Brunswick every fall for the NAWEB conferences, and every fall, of course, New Brunswick looks a lot like that, and the fall foliage never ceased to impress me. I remember standing on the steps outside the WOO Center for the NAWEB conferences, and I'd look at the forest and think about e-learning and forestry, which is an odd combination, but it works. Can't do that so much anymore since they've taken out many of the trees. Nonetheless, we have many forests and they continue to inspire me. But most of all, I think I came to New Brunswick for the community, the example of community that was set at the NAWEB conferences. I went to just about every NAWEB conference in the 10 years that they were offered between 95 and 2004. And in particular, the NAWEB conference organizer, Rick Hall, who is lurking around this building as I speak. So if you see him, shake his hand. Rick Hall exemplified for me the spirit of community and the spirit of community in New Brunswick, showing appreciation for the contributions of everybody and showing a generosity of spirit. What's mine is yours, he would say, and when it's in my home, it's your home. And he didn't just say the words. He actually believed the words, and I believed him. And thus, I came here from New Brunswick. Sometimes it wasn't easy. In 1997, I broke my ankle and tried very hard to beg off. This is me giving a presentation at NAWEB 1997 on crutches. Rick made sure that I came, made sure that I had airfare, took me into his home. That is community. Also, when I was here in New Brunswick during the times of the NAWEB conferences, I got to meet Rory McGreal and many of the people at the tele-education. Rory and the other people on tele-education also underlined that same value of community. They made a name for themselves and for New Brunswick as a whole by sharing learning resources and knowledge and information about learning. And things that tele-education New Brunswick was well known for was the listing of online courses, which it made available to everybody in the world, the East-West Project, which involved standardization and was an early look at things like learning objects before there were such things as learning objects. And in many ways, they led the way. They made a name for New Brunswick, a name for New Brunswick not just as a place where we practiced education and online learning, but where we created an environment where learners supported learners, communities of learners supported communities of learners. People, in other words, helping each other learn. And that was what I found when I came here to New Brunswick for the NAWEB conferences in the 1990s, and that is why I moved here in 2001. And since then, with my job at National Research Council, I've taken the opportunity to take that philosophy and that approach to learning around the world. This is EduCamp Colombia, which I went to last year. I'm working with the Ministry of Education in Colombia, and what we have there are Colombians in Bogota and Medellin helping each other learn. This is Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, where I went earlier this year. And again, you don't see a lecture here. You don't see somebody standing up delivering content. What you see are people in a community helping each other learn, working with the content, working with the technology. And in Taiwan, I was able to bring to them, again, the New Brunswick spirit of community, the idea of people helping each other learn. And this is at a conference of educators who are creating open learning resources in Chinese for people in Taiwan and in China. Communities of educators also exist online, and we're seeing a lot of the new Web 2.0 and social networking technology being used to support these communities. Educational bloggers, for example, of which I am one, share many things, including images and other resources on sites like Flickr. We see these same people and other people sharing their content, their blog posts, their research, their reactions in things like, on their blogs, which they access in things like this RSS reader, where we can read the blogs from the more than 500 different edubloggers that are out there. Educators create communities and social networking sites themselves. This is an educational community formed by the New Media Consortium, which is an American organization of educators in Facebook. And again, the idea here is to exchange contents and information. Classroom 2.0 is something that was started up by school teachers. And the school teachers used an online service called Ning. And this site now has about 7,000 members. They exchange ideas, information, and resources. Again, exemplifying the idea of educators helping each other learn. This is a site called Plaxo. Again, it's another one of these social networking sites. What Plaxo does is aggregate resources from various things, like Flickr and blogs and memes and other kinds of social networking sites. And it creates, if you will, a stream or a river of content that is being produced by this community as a whole. This is Wiki Educator, and I'll come back to Wiki Educator again later on in the talk. This is a community of people, a community of educators, creating educational resources for each other to share in the classroom. This same idea of communities of learners learning together also applies to communities of learners learning where they need to learn. It's not just about sitting in front of a computer at a desk, and it's not just about learning in a classroom. IBM is probably one of the major pioneers in this. They're well known for developing social networking and other collaborative technologies. They needed to, they have offices around the world. And they use these technologies, now it's IBM, so none of it's out there. They do it all privately behind closed doors. But nonetheless, they use these technologies to exchange business intelligence and other information among each other. What IBM has discovered is that the nature of community has been changing over the years, and this is something that we'll see as well as I proceed through this talk. We began back in the 90s with e-learning 1.0 is something we'll call it, e-learning as classes, e-learning as content in learning management systems, and we have been moving gradually through the late 90s and through the, I don't know what to call them, the 2000s? That seems too all-encompassing. But I don't want to say back in hot eight because I'm not that old yet. To e-learning 2.0, virtual classrooms, communities of practice, and as David Gibson talked about, games and other kinds of online services. This is an application some of you wearing green here will be familiar with. It's called Company Command. It was created by some company commanders in the United States. It's based on a piece of technology called Drupal. Drupal is open source technology. It's a PHP-based community management system. And basically what happened is the people in company command, they began simply emailing each other to give themselves advice and tips about what to expect out in the field, and this gradually grew and grew and grew until they needed something rather more formal than that. Our own military has been working with things like this program here, and I was privileged to be able to listen to Captain McDonald talk about the combat training center's work in adapting the online game called SWAT for use by Canadian forces. What I noticed about SWAT is not, it's what makes SWAT attractive is not that it's got great graphics, it's not that things blow up, although we all like that. It's rather that the people there work in teams, the people there communicate with each other, and the object of the game is not so much to kill enemy combatants, but rather to work as a team, and as Captain McDonald said, achieve the right outcomes in the end. So even the games have community aspects to them. And we see virtual worlds being used as well in other domains. Second Life, which you may be familiar with through the massive media exposure that it has gotten, is being used by a large number of universities. And again, what makes Second Life, as a useful learning resource is the fact that it can be used, again, for community. It's not the fact that it's a virtual world. It just happens to be a virtual world. But as you can see from this EduBlogs Award ceremony that took place last December in Second Life, people are able to come into Second Life and communicate and collaborate with each other. Now, Second Life is probably not going to be the educational application of the future because it's proprietary, because it's not the sort of thing you can just set up on your own server. But people like Dave Cormier at UPEI have been working on alternative platforms such as OpenSim, and there are other people working on additional platforms, including something called Croquet. So there are alternatives out there to Second Life that would do the same thing and will provide the same educational service. The new technology, I want to emphasize, supports learning, even games, supports learning by supporting community. So what we have here is the idea of learning in communities. What we have here is the idea of learning communities. And we've learned and heard a lot about learning communities. Even back in the 1990s, when I was first going to the NAWEB conferences, there was a lot of talk about learning communities, Etienne Wenger and others. And so we thought we had a pretty good understanding of what learning communities were like, and we thought we had a pretty good handle on the sort of technology that we would have to build. And I remember being hired in 1999 away from Assiniboine Community College to go to the University of Alberta, and they wanted me to build a learning community there called Minimal, and the name should kind of tell you what kind of learning community it was. It wasn't completely non-commercial. And they were inspired by the work of people like Hegel and Armstrong, who made a call about net.game or net game. And you know, hosting web communities by Cliff DeGello. And they were also very inspired by the book called Information Architecture on the World Wide Web. So they made me an information architect. And as nearly as I can tell, I was the world's first, but I can't verify that. And I'm going to stake that claim anyways, and I'm sticking to it. So here's what we thought. We thought communities should have a sense of shared purpose. You know, they should follow a vision. They should have the same sort of objectives in mind. We thought that communities should establish clear boundaries, defining who is a member of the community, and more importantly, who is not a member of the community. We thought that communities were defined by the rules and the regulations and the policies and the protocols and the enforcement of these things so that people behaved. Communities were defined, we were told, by the interaction among the members. And these interactions were the essential purpose. And people would come to your site in order to interact and maybe buy things. And finally, communities depended on trust, respect, and support of all the members for each other and for the community as a whole and for the purpose of the community as a whole. And communities would form, in the end, group identity. People would identify with themselves, with the community, as much as with themselves. You know, and it's interesting when I think about that, because I think about that and I think it's not just the definition of online community that we're talking about, it's the definition of community itself that we're talking about. And, you know, we look at things like the educational community here in New Brunswick, and those were the same sorts of things even that were believed as well, and the idea that there should be a shared purpose and that we should be involved in common projects and all of that, and we should have this group identity, you know, all march to the same drummer, all reading from the same song of any kind. But we've learned things since then, because in the time between 1997 and earlier and now, we have become very connected, one might say hyper-connected, with each other, for better or worse, and with people around the world. And we've learned that online communities are not always as united as we might suppose. Online communities may look like they're all rowing in the same direction, but if you look at them a little bit more closely, you see each person has his or her own destination in mind. What we've learned since then is that we want our online learning classrooms to be as little like classrooms as possible, and indeed we want them to be quite the opposite. There's a lot of work being done in the United States these days on small schools, and one of the things that was appealing about small schools is that you would create these communities of learners. When you created these communities of learners, they look remarkably like the classes that you had before. And we're beginning to learn that even in these communities of learners, we want them to be doing different things at different times. We want to approach learning in almost a 180-degree direction from the way we look at learning now. We look at communities and we see that there are different levels or different types. I can't pronounce it. Miss and Chuck and Anderson use the word levels. I don't like the word levels because I think they're different directions rather than things leading in the same direction. But we have, on the one hand, communication, which is based on individualism. It's an atomistic view of the world where the only thing that's happening is one person talks to another person who talks to another person. Everybody does the wrong thing, and that's about it. And at the other end, we have the strong notion of community that we're more familiar with, the notion of collaboration, where everybody pulls together. It's like Jason and the Argonauts, where everybody has one vision, they're working on one set of assumptions, one type of content, one type of project. And then in the middle is a picture of community which is often called cooperation, and it's based on a mesh or a network structure. And there is an interdependence in between the members. There is an interaction, a communication, and a set of protocols. Nonetheless, there is not the sense of identity. There is not the singleness of purpose that exists in the more tightly knit communities. And when we look at the technology, that tells us what type of community is beginning to prevail on the web. And essentially, we are moving from the collaborative picture, from the organization of content, content distribution, learning, and other functions as a hierarchy, and toward a cooperative model, toward interaction as a mesh. And here we have the change in the content that we're looking at. Previously, our idea of learning, our idea of collaboration was centered around one type of content, one body of content, and everything related to that. But now, in the cooperative model, we see many contents, each individual with his or her different perspective on different types of content, and the idea of cooperation is that you're drawing linkages between the individuals and between the content. So what we have here in this mesh picture, or in this mesh depiction of learning, is a set of individuals interacting with each other and a set of different contents interacting with each other. I like to talk about these contents, and sometimes we think of them as learning objects, although that word has a lot of baggage with it. So I think of them as mostly resources or just content. And the content, whatever it happens to be, in this learning mesh, functions very much in the way words do in a conversation. It is the way we speak to each other. It is the way we represent ideas to each other. And so we have a picture of the World Wide Web that is emerging, and this is the picture of Web 2.0. This particular diagram was created actually just a few days ago by Mark Cantor. You might know him. He's the person behind a company that was originally called Mechler Media, and then later became Macromedia, which later became part of Adobe, and of course was the company that created Flash. And he said to me one day, well, I've been living with a chip on my shoulder ever since, because Flash is almost the opposite of what we're talking about now. Flash is very closed, very proprietary, and you need to buy very expensive software to create it. Now we're talking about a mesh web of interactive content, and in the center there, and you can't really read it, is me, is my profile, my identity. And the same picture has been evolving in the world of online learning as well, the idea of personal learning environments. And this is a picture by Scott Wilson, who works at a center called CETUS, which is a part of JISC, the Joint Information Systems Committee in Britain. And the idea, again, is at the center, what Scott called future VLE, this was very early on in our discussions, that is the individual, that is the learner, and then surrounding that person are all the different, if you will, Web 2.0 applications that that person interacts with. The idea here is that this is not one single system, this is not a learning management system, this is rather a number of different systems linked together through common protocols and through the creative actions of the members who are using those different systems. Since then, we've had a large number of different depictions of the personal learning environment. This is one created by Dave Tosh of ELG, not ELGG, I'm told. And nobody knows why they called it ELG. Again, depicting, well, the individual, the ELG, at the center, and then the interaction with all the different applications. Here's a depiction of the personal learning environment as functions of social media, the different kind of things that you can do, comment, or collaborate, or analyze, or discuss. And again, you use different applications, different platforms to do different things depending on what you want to do. Here is another picture of the personal learning environment, this time depicting the personal learning environment as a collection of interconnected applications. We have instant messaging, topic searching, social bookmarking, and the rest. These things form what we call Web 2.0. Web 2.0 is founded on a limited number of essential technologies. First and foremost, probably, is user-generated content. And I've put up there on the screen something called a lolcat, L-O-L-C-A-T, if you want to find 10,000 more or so. And what a lolcat is, obviously, is an image with some writing on it, usually created for humor. What's important is they're entirely created by users. There is no commercial source of lolcats, happily. And these images act, again, as I said, as words in a conversation. And the idea isn't simply that they're funny. The idea is that they're funny because you know what they mean. There is a cultural connection to them and not simply a semantic connection to them. And the idea here is that it changes our perspective of content. It changes it from the idea of content being the subject, content being what everything is about, to content being the object, content being the thing we fling around the net in our actions to each other, content being the thing that we use. Another major element of Web 2.0 is syndication, and I might also say adaptation. This is actually a floor drain, but the floor drain is nicely arranged in the symbol that has been commonly used on the World Wide Web to represent RSS and content syndication in general. And the idea here is that if I create content in one place, I can use syndication technologies to send it to other places. And obviously, my capacity to send it to other places is what is going to make this whole interaction thing work. Another major concept, and I know you've heard a lot about this, but I still need to underline it, is the concept of software as a service. This is the idea of accessing your applications on the web. It's the idea of web applications accessing other web applications on the web, and indeed of web applications working together on the web. And so consequently, we see things like AJAX, which allows web pages to function like their programs on your computer, to REST, representational state transfer, which is what allows one website to get data from another website, and then SOAP, Simple Object Access Protocol, or as it's more commonly called, web services, which allow web services to interact with each other. And then OpenID. This is a technology that will become very important. Sooner or later, probably all of you will have an OpenID. If you have an AOL account, you already have an OpenID, you just don't know about it. What an OpenID is a single login ID for a person to access any service on the web. It's not one of these strong single IDs like Microsoft Passport. It's not one of these federated single sign-ons which work only at colleges like Shibboleth. It is something that works anywhere on the web. It is something that allows anyone to be an identity provider. You can be an identity provider if you want. I'm going to be sooner rather than later, I think. I don't know. Kind of empowering to be an identity provider. And the idea here is that it's a distributed identity system. So nobody controls it. There's no bottlenecks. And most importantly, no fees to pay. And that all leads us to what is sometimes being called Office 2.0. These are the different Web 2.0 applications that we can use, that we will all use eventually to do common everyday tasks, including learning tasks online. And as I go through this, keep in mind it's not simply the emulation of the program that you have running from Microsoft on your computer or on your cell phone. I did hear that. It's rather, each one of these is also a place where we can collaborate online and form community online. People talk about online community and social networking as though it's like Facebook and LinkedIn and Friendster and that. Online community is much more than that. Online community is now part of the applications that we work with online. Doing bookmarks, for example, Delicious is a site, that should be a period, not a hyphen, in Delicious. is a site where people share bookmarks with each other. Calendaring. I use Google Calendar. I use Google Calendar to make sure I was here today. That's that blue square right down there after the last one on Tuesday. After that one, I'm done. The thing with Google Calendar is I can use Google Calendar anywhere. I use different computers. I use Linux, Windows, and Mac computers. I use cyber cafes in places like Kuala Lumpur. I can't use Outlook. I can use Google Calendar because Google Calendar not only works anywhere on the web, it works with my other applications and indeed inside the other applications. For contacts, you can use LinkedIn, you can use Friendster, you can use Facebook. Again, the idea here is that people can share their contact lists with each other. Although what we're discovering is you don't want to do that too much. For Salesforce and for customer relationship management, there's sites like Salesforce. This is the first commercial site that I've shown you so far because customer relations management software hasn't been commoditized yet. It will be, and sooner or later there will be free CRM software out there. Database. You could install and try to learn something like Access or DB4 or whatever, or you can just use this Web 2.0 application, which is completely browser-based, called Dabble. Desktop, there's a variety of desktops, or sometimes they're also called webtops, and the purpose of these things is to manage your other applications and launch them for you. Google Homepage is one, PageFlakes is another, and there's a whole list of others out there as well. Document management. Instead of messing around with PDFs and Microsoft documents and screen scans and TIFFs and whatever, you can just upload them into this free service called Scribe, and that it renders them all in a format called iPaper. And you might think, well, who cares? But when you actually view a document viewed through Scribe, that must be the end of the first period.
Jesus.
You wonder why you were using the other technologies. That was very interesting. Organ music now? Email, or Google Mail, because it works. Feed reading, I mentioned earlier. There's Google Reader, there's Blog Lines, and there's about 40 others. Every way you could possibly want to read an RSS, Atom, or other feed is available to you. Presentation. I'm creating a set of slides on a piece of software called Zoho Show. Zoho Show is very useful because it interacts with another piece of software that I'll use later on. And the thing is, when I'm working on my slides in Zoho Show, I can work on them by myself, or again, I can work on them with other people. Spreadsheets, for example. Here's Google Spreadsheet. We're just messing around there, so you're not actually seeing data, but we have a group of us, we're working on something called Broadband Video Project, and one of the things we're doing is doing a roll-up of the different online video technologies that are out there. And the way we're doing that is we're all accessing a Google Spreadsheet, and the nice thing about Google Spreadsheet is you can all work on it together. So I can work on it, you can work on it. So what we're doing is we're sitting down, we're teleconferencing and video conferencing so we can see each other and make faces at each other. But we also have another screen with Google Spreadsheet up, and I'm working on it, and you're working on it, and it's kind of neat because you see the little square where I am, you see the little square where someone else is, and as they move their mouse, the little square moves around. Oops. It's all very exciting. Weblogs, there's WordPress, there's Blogger. You can have one person create a weblog, or you can create a weblog as a community, or you can have many people individually create weblogs and create a community by aggregating the RSS feeds from them in Google Reader. Oops, uh-oh, I don't know how to call that to make of that. Documents, what you're seeing, and this is a real example, not something I just made up for this talk, it's a paper that I'm writing with Daniel Lemire. Daniel Lemire lives and works in Montreal. I live and work in Moncton. We both work on this real time, and as you can see, we can communicate back and forth, work on the same document. He writes a sentence, I erase it, it's all very fun. Drawing, this is an actual drawing that I've created in Gliffy to represent the internal workings of the personal learning environment. Again, I can draw, I can share my drawings, I can work on drawings with other people. This is the advantage of using Web 2.0 applications. Because they're on the web, it's not simply sitting in my computer. So these applications become a point of community and not just a point of productivity. IceCore, more free software, although we've paid for support. We're using this piece of software to manage a large development project, all the groups and all the production, the schedules and the deadlines, because there's a bunch of people working on that here. And they're all familiar with that front page. Mind mapping, I'm not really a mind map person, so I don't really have any mind maps to show you, but there's the front screen to a piece of software. Again, Web 2.0 software, you access it through your browser. You notice every one of these screens, that's my browser around it. And you can collaborate on creating mind maps. Photo editor, there's all kinds of photo editors out there. Picnic is one of the most popular, and the reason why Picnic is very popular is because you can access it directly from Flickr. And Flickr is the place that I use to manage my photos. And believe me, I definitely want to use Flickr to manage my photos because I do not physically have that much hard drive space on my computer. Flickr you can get for free. I actually find it worthwhile spending the, I forget what it is, $20 a year for what they call the pro version. The web conferencing, always on web conferencing, instead of buying expensive conferencing solutions. And if you fancy yourself to be the TV star, you can use this free application. And I would have used it today, except I wasn't certain about the connectivity, although it doesn't take major connectivity. Ustream, you can broadcast your events live. They go to anyone out there, any out there in the world. It also records the broadcast so that you can show it later on as flash video or uploaded on YouTube or whatever. Web 2.0 applications are virtual worlds. Now, they don't have jet fighters, they don't have valleys and mountains, and they're not like, you know, the elephants of the Serengeti, but they are virtual worlds. They're just different virtual worlds. They have multiple users, they have avatars, you can see what people are doing in them. They're based on user-generated content. There's a persistent world. When I go back to the paper I'm offering to Daniel Lemire, it'll be the way we left it. All the properties of virtual worlds are also properties of these Web 2.0 applications. And so the way to think about these Web 2.0 applications is the same as the way you think about virtual worlds, is the same as you think about community on the web. Their contents are mobile. This is a page from my website. In the middle there is, well, the moon is my photograph of the eclipse of the moon that took place. And it was a real nice blue that day, which was pretty cool, which I polished off on Picnic and put up on Flickr and then imported into my slideshow, which I did actually make in PowerPoint because I'm not that comfortable with Zoho yet, although I'm getting there. And then I uploaded my slides to a site called SlideShare. This site allows me to display my slides as a flash presentation, and as you can see, embed them in a web page. And if you hit that little arrow, you'd see every one of the slides. Because the slides aren't so good on their own, I record my talks in MP3. I use a piece of free software called Audacity, which is running, I hope, on my computer right now in the back, and picking up my sound. And I save that from Audacity as MP3, which I then upload to a site called Audio, or Odeo, O-D-E-O. And Odeo, Odeo, gives me a little MP3 player, which I also embed. And for all of my presentations, including this one, I have a nice little page with the embedded slides, the embedded audio. And for those days when I'm really feeling inspired, I also have video, which I've embedded from Google Video. The contents belong to the user. The contents are not produced by publishers and distributed by teachers or authorities. The contents are produced by, shared by, traded by, exchanged by the users themselves. The contents are shared. The key to the community is not doing things for the people in the community. community. It's not giving them education. It's not giving them resources. It's not building products for them. It's enabling them to do things for themselves. It's cooperative learning. Basic elements critical to this cooperative work. Interdependence, accountability, interaction, social skills. These are all the basic elements of virtual worlds. They're all the basic elements of Web 2.0. And we see that in the software architecture that supports cooperation as well. Applications like Yahoo Pipes. Yahoo Pipes, it's a bit complicated to mess around with. It'll take you a full day to learn. I hate that. And what Yahoo Pipes would do is allow you to gather feeds from multiple sources around the internet and mix them together in interesting ways. Google Gears does the same thing for you, and it allows you to create applications. Things like the application that's out there right now, it's a Google map, a little icon, and it's following the Olympic torch. There's another one I like to follow because I'm always curious. It tracks the International Space Station. You just see the little space station moving across the Pacific Ocean. I never see it anywhere else. I don't know why. Grasshopper is an application that I've written myself. It's an individual personal learning environment. It is being released as open source in a matter of days. Grasshopper, I have a Grasshopper demo site. It's demo.gowns.ca. That's just in its final stages of preparation. And Rod's having a good laugh back there because Rod's the guy who created the Grasshopper logo. Thanks, Rod. And there's a page from inside Grasshopper, and it's partially a system that allows you to import content from anywhere, send it to different content anywhere, to update it, to add values to it, to change it, to create, to make it your own. As I sometimes say, aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward. And so we see the community changing as a result of these technologies. We see community based not on identity, we see community based not on sameness, but rather community based on being a set of connections, connections among the individuals, connections among the content. We see the idea of community as networks. When I was in New Zealand a year or so ago, there was this great debate about the unity of a community of educators that we had traveling from town to town to town. And out of that came the distinction between communities as groups, which are based on unity and coordination and their toes, a clear sense of members and non-members, and their distributive, that is to say, the knowledge flows from the top. From that picture of community to the idea of community as networks, and what I thought at the time, or what I still believe today, is that the new Web 2.0 technologies that are based on community as network or community as mesh are based on alternative network-based principles, and I'll talk about those. The first principle is diversity. The idea that knowledge in a community is best obtained from a variety of different perspectives or different points of view. It's the old parable of the elephant, right? Everybody has a different view of the elephant. And if you want to understand what the elephant is, the best thing to do is have everybody report on their own distinct perspectives rather than to pick a single authoritative perspective. And this applies generally. You want a diversity of membership in your community. You also want a diversity of applications, a diversity of protocols, a diversity of formats, a diversity of content. Concordant with that, and essential to that, is autonomy, the idea that the members of the community work, although they work together, they work autonomously. They work as individuals, they make their own decisions on the ground, they have their own objectives that they are pursuing. Also related and essential for a community as mesh or a community as network to work is the idea of openness. Openness has several connotations. One connotation, and I allude to it here with this diagram or this photo from Creative Commons, is openness of content. In order for communication and aggregation and remixing to happen, the content must flow freely, try saying that fast, through a network, which means that the content can't be proprietary, it can't be locked down. It has to be the sort of content that you can share easily. also openness talks about different technologies. The technologies that work in Web 2.0 are technologies that are open to working with other kinds of technology because they define interactions with other technologies as data formats or as service formats, as RSS or REST or web services, rather than as being plugins to specific software. And then finally, the idea of community as web or mesh is based on the idea of connectivity, and again, David mentioned that briefly in his talk. This is the idea that the knowledge that is created by the community is created as a consequence of the connectivity, as a consequence of the interactivity of the members, that there is no individual that has the full and complete picture, no individual that is the authoritative source of knowledge, but rather the knowledge emerges or is created from the interactions of the group as a whole. And I sometimes talk about the knowledge of how to fly the 747 from Paris to Toronto, and there's no single person on the planet, nor could there be, who knows how to do that. Because the person who knows how to pilot the airplane is not the person who knows how to make tires, and you need tires. And not the person who knows how to navigate the airplane, is not the person who knows how to land the airplane safely. You need a large number of people, each doing different things and working cooperatively to make this happen. Finally, I want to close on the idea of supporting educational communities, because I wanted to talk about educational communities here in New Brunswick. I wanted to talk about the idea of providing services, and we've seen a number of examples of these so far. 19 of the top educational applications that are used by educators today are free. And the way education is being provided to educators on the World Wide Web today is through the creation and provision of free services that people can access in order to create their own content, in order, as I say sometimes, to pursue their own good in their own way. Look at the Moodle experience, for example. Moodle is an open source learning management system. It's second in popularity only to Blackboard, and to Blackboard's great consternation, Moodle is gaining rapidly on it. Mark Duggan-Ness, when he was creating Moodle, created a supportive community around Moodle, and this community was based on some very simple principles. Not simply a clear and obvious website design, but that was part of it, but also a way to access and work with the software, simple, extensive documentation, forums that are easy to use and are structured so that people can find discussions of particular topics, and then, of course, a central library of code. We could do this too in New Brunswick. And in fact, we used to do this in New Brunswick. We used to do this with organizations like Tele Education. We used to do this with conferences like NAWIB, and we're beginning to do that again. There's certainly precedents for this sort of thing. For example, Wiki Educator, which I mentioned earlier, is an organization sponsored by the Commonwealth of Learning, based mostly right now in British Columbia. The Commonwealth of Learning is the organization that is creating this space where people can create free content around the world to use for their own learning. Connections is a site based at Rice University, and what Connections is a place where any educator in the world can go use their software for free, create courses, online courses, form modules, whatever, and save them and store them and display them. European SchoolNet. I can't begin to list the different services that European SchoolNet offers, but if you look at the list of sites at the side there, you get some idea. The Life, the Olympics, Energy is Our Future, the EUN community, and a host of other services. And again, European SchoolNet provides services that teachers in Europe access. They use it for content, and they use it for online software. Joint Information Systems Committee has a huge list of services that it provides to educators in Great Britain. I mentioned CETUS, which is doing some of the most advanced educational software research in the world right now. That's just one of its many services. It has document repositories, information repositories. It offers discussion list services to any educator in Britain who happens to want one and a whole host of other services. New Media Consortium in the United States is a collection of public and private enterprises who have worked together to create services and research for the educational community in the United States. They have a large presence on Second Life and have been doing a lot of work in gaming and on virtual worlds, among many, many other things. EDNA, Education Network Australia, they set up an instance of Moodle for educators in Australia. Any person, any educator in Australia who wanted to create a group, discussion group, or join a discussion group was able to do so for free at the EDNA Moodle site. There are hundreds of different forums and tens of thousands, approximately 35,000 educators on the site. 35,000 people, 35,000 educators, which probably is every educator in Australia. It's all offered by EDNA to them for free. EduBlogs is something that was set up by a guy called James Farmer. James Farmer was a blogger. He got a hold of some WordPress software. He decided to offer blogs to a few of his friends. He's eventually quit his job so that he can manage this full time. His job was as a writer for The Age, an Australian newspaper. He now has more than 100,000 EduBlogs. These are blogs specifically dedicated to education on the EduBlog site. He offers this service for free, yet it still makes him a living. So I ask where we are now in Canada and in New Brunswick, because we don't have, in this country, an equivalent service. We don't have a GIST, we don't have an EDNA. I had hoped maybe that the Canadian Council on Learning might provide services like this, but that hasn't happened so far. But what I think is that here in New Brunswick, we have the talent, we have the expertise, and we have the motivation to become the place in Canada that shares, the place in Canada that provides these learning resources, these services for educators in this country. And I think that if we want to found a learning community, if we want to found a community of learners helping learners here in this province, the way to do that is not to try to create a community just for ourselves, but the way to do that, the way to learn about learning communities, is to offer that learning community the different types of software, perhaps instances of Moodle, discussion list, OpenSim, whatever, we'll talk about that, to people across the country. That's my proposition, and I thank you for taking the time to listen to me.
I tell you, it's interesting that he uses the 747 analogy. I had the chance with Steve to go flying in the Gripen simulator on the base, and we jumped in the simulator. He was pilot, I was co-pilot. We got the brief instruction, got up into a hover, and about 7 seconds into the flight, he had it rolled over, and both of us were dead. I've had the chance to hear Stephen talk a number of times, and one thing I always find great is he's always got his finger on the pulse. What's coming down the pipes, and where we can go with things, and what you alluded to here, yeah, there is definite potential in this province, and all we need to do is band together as a community and get it. So, Stephen, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Now, I've got a little piece of administration. Anyone who has an Ontario license plate on a black Cavalier, it's okay because I have booster cables.
You left your lights on.
Alpha, Mike, Lima, Papa, 550. Your lights were left on. No takers? Bingo? All right. The next speaker is my very distinct